The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Welcome once again to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me on the phone, I have, recovering from the Ebola virus, is Hassan Godwin.
What? Okay. Sure.
Well, you had the Ebola virus last week. That's what you did.
Is that what I had last week? Great.
Yeah. Great. Well, you're recovering. Okay. That's good news.
Yeah. All right.
All right, never mind.
have a ball, man. Have at it.
I gotta take pleasure somewhere.
Yeah, that's what you choose. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I got nothing to say.
It's what stories can I come up with each week that Hassan is involved
in? He's just not here. He's absent. He's out. He's out with his woman. He's out anywhere. But I have to have Ebola, or I have to be in purgatory. That's fine.
Okay. Fine. All right. So next time I'm gonna have you fighting something.
Yeah. Okay. Like.
Fighting dragons?
Yes. I'm out killing dragons. There's lots of them in the Bronx. There's just a ton of them.
The dragon Bronx is in the tunnels. That's what they do.
Yes.
They're hanging out there.
Bunches of them.
So if anybody's having trouble to us the air, you can go online, www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us on the live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can see me. And if you have that high-tech spy camera stuff, you can see Hassan.
Yeah, please. Don't, though.
You see him fighting dragons.
Yes. Well, yeah. I'm not fighting a dragon just yet.
You have one of those shaky handheld things with you while you're fighting a dragon. Don't put the camera down. I need to record this while I'm fighting dragons.
Exactly. Don't help me fight the dragon. Make sure you catch all of the action of me fighting the dragon alone.
We have to document it. It has to be documented.
It's like with Cloverfield, right?
Yes, exactly.
Running around like an idiot. With a camera. Okay. All right. That's fair.
I like it that there's some movies they don't even care anymore.
They don't even mention it anymore as to why they're filming. It's like reality television where there's zooms and, supposedly, what's his name? The Hell's Kitchen guy just walks into the restaurant off of the street and starts yelling at people. But, nobody realizes they have to lay track for that. They have to, someone's got to be behind the guy with a steady cam. They have to plan all that. And there's music, and there's cues, and there's dramatic pauses for
editing. Don't forget the editing.
Yeah, exactly. But it's reality television. Yes. Remember that.
Yes.
That's exactly how reality works.
Exactly, because, we have camera crews following us around all the time.
All the time. Right now. Mine's taking a break right now, so it's okay for the show. I told him to take a break for the show.
Take a break from when we actually need you.
Yeah,
to be.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Because that's the logic I use. I use reality television logic.
So let's take it away with the news,
please.
The news, as always, is brought to you in part by the Rad Bastards at Belmore Towing, located in Belmore, New York. Ready to help you for your any of your towing needs. Practicing legal. But rat bastardy tactics, such as charging you $70 for a $7 lug nut to fix your car.
Did you really get charged $70?
I got charged $50. I got charged $50 for a $7 lug nut.
$50, but you've upped it. You've upped
it by
$20. I
upped it because of interest.
Right, okay. Okay, right, fair enough.
And the movie that's coming soon to the theaters near you. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Monkey Killer, where Abraham Lincoln comes out of retirement to fight the monkey vampire king who rides flying sharks.
Flying sharks. Yes.
Yes.
Oh, that script has evolved a little since the last time I've heard about it.
Yes, he's now riding flying sharks. Instead of horses, they're riding flying sharks.
Now, are there vampire monkeys or are there vampire slash monkeys?
They are monkeys got that bitten by the vampire and turned into vampire monkeys.
The vampire's out in the woods wasting his time fighting monkeys.
Yeah, because he ran out of people. There's no monkeys don't wear garlic.
Okay. That's the best logic I've ever heard.
Monkeys don't wear garlic.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. Okay.
So, that's what's going on with that. By the time next year, this is going to be like a full script.
Oh, I'm totally looking to retire on this whole thing. So trust me, I'm waiting for it to happen. If Sharknado is actually a genuine thing that people are making money on and that people are mentioning in mainstream Hollywood, then Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Monkey Killer, can be, can pretty much be the nest egg for three generations of our family. So
yes.
That's fine. That's perfectly fine.
So let's start off with the sad news, as always. The sad news. actress Molly Glynn, most famous for her recurring role as a doctor on the TV series Chicago Fire, has died after being hit by a tree as she rode her bike in Forest Park, Illinois. It seems that Molly had an audition earlier that day, that Friday, and she and her husband decided to go for a ride. The inclement weather took them by surprise, and a tree slammed into her as the couple sought to ride safety. She was 46.
Wow.
Yeah, that's some bad mojo right there.
And the show is still on?
The show is still on the air. It's picked up for its third season, maybe second season. It's coming in September, but it's picked up for another season.
I have to do some scrambling to explain that. That's too bad.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
And,
I sincerely feel for her husband, because that's just, you go out to do something recreational and it turns into a tragedy. That's no good.
Yeah, and like a tree falling on you, that's like, man, that's a rough way to go.
I don't imagine. I mean, any way you go while you're riding a bike or while you're doing something active, like when it happens that sudden, has got to be rough. But that's definitely, I mean, you just do not expect that to happen.
Yeah.
That's nowhere in your gallery of possibilities when you're out and about doing things. Yeah. So that is really tragic.
And speaking of really tragic, actor Richard Kiel, depending how you pronounce it, best known for his role as the Bond villain Jaws in the 007 movies The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker, died this week. At 7'2", Richard went on to star in numerous film roles such as Silver Streak, Cannonball Run 2, and Happy Gilmore, just to name a few. His last role was that of Vladimir in the animated film Tangled in 2010. He had suffered a severe head injury in a 1992 car accident that affected his balance and forced him to walk with a cane or a scooter to get around. No cause of death has been announced as of yet, and he was a spry 74.
Oh, man. I remember Jaws.
Yeah.
I do. I remember Jaws from Moonraker, unfortunately. Because he was in previous Bond movie.
Right.
Help me here.
Spy Who Loved Me.
The Spy Who Loved Me, I'm sorry. And I was too young. I hadn't seen that. I saw Moonraker, and my mom took me to shut me up to see Moonraker because it had space in it. And, it was a terrible movie. I say that now. Out of respect. I'm a James Bond fan. I've seen almost all the James Bond films, including the Sean Connery ones. But Moonraker is not a great film. When I was a kid, fantastic film, as far as I was concerned. And Richard Jaws had silver teeth.
Right.
As his villain. That's why they called him Jaws. And he bit a cable wire for a cable car.
Yep.
In half. That's how I remember it. That's my first visual memory of him on television while watching the trailers on TV. I was like, we gotta go see that. And so we went to see Jaws, and they were like, Jaws is back, Bond is back, and Jaws is back, and blah. I'm like, what, Jaws is back? Bond kills all his villains. So how can Jaws be back? And yeah, he was actually in The Spy Who Loved Me, which I didn't see till like maybe 20 years after I saw Moonraker.
Right.
And, he turns kind of into a good guy at the end of Moonraker. Spoiler alert, sorry.
if you haven't seen it by now.
But I blew it anyway. There's still people out there probably haven't seen Moonraker. But it's just a great role for him. He was a giant, huge, monstrous-looking man. But it looked like he was like a big, gentle, giant guy, especially when he turned into a good guy. And I didn't see him in Happy Gilmore, where he had actual speaking lines and actually, actually was acting.
Right.
And he did a great job in that film, and it's really sad.
I remember,
that's not so great.
The last thing I remember seeing him in was in Inspector Gadget. They had a reformed villains class, and they had a whole bunch of old villains there.
In the live-action Inspector Gadget?
In the live-action Inspector Gadget with Matthew Broderick and Michelle Trachtenberger. At the very end of the movie, the bad guy, I guess Dr. Claw, was reformed, or maybe it was the sidekick. I don't remember who was there, but it was like reformed villains, and they were all there, like all the old school villains that were all there being reformed. So I thought that was kind of a little funny cameo.
Claw.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen the live action Inspector Gadget. So
well, beyond like 10 minutes of movie, it wasn't worth seeing.
Yeah. I was a giant fan of the TV show. So of the cartoon when it was on.
Then you really shouldn't watch that show.
Yeah, that's pretty much why I avoided it.
Although, you know? since I'm telling you not to watch it, I'll tell you the one good thing about it. They actually gave Don Adams a cameo.
Okay.
So
really? They did?
Yeah, he had a...
Yeah, because he was still alive when the first one came out, when the Matthew Broderick one came out.
Yeah, he voiced Brain at the very end of the movie. And I was like, oh my God, Brain's talking, it has its voice. And that was pretty much my enthusiasm for the movie. Oh, there's the villains. And I'm like, all right, and that was it. So,
wow. All right, well, you know what? I'll skip it.
Yes. But things you shouldn't skip.
Okay, good segue.
Is our happy news, which is our contest. We have a contest. Hooray. For the second week in a row. We have a contest, which normally we call the world's easiest contest. But
it is.
But we changed it last week, so you missed out.
All you had to do previously was acknowledge our existence with a phone call.
Yes.
And you got yourself a prize.
Right.
I don't understand how that's a hard contest. That is by far, it's a cheat. It's like a fix. It's like a fixed contest. Or it used to be. So tell us the new contest now.
So this is the not as easy, the world's not as easy as it was before contest. What we did last week, we played a theme song from a television show, and the first person who tweeted us at ICFTR or posted on our Facebook page with the hashtag NYCCTickets with the correct answer won. That's not that hard, but you got to
do a little more. But not as easy.
Right. So last week we played.
You'll have to know how to tweet, which is kind of difficult. For
or you can go on
the
computer and go to Facebook. You can find us.
That's true. And people usually know where their Facebook page is.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's www.itcamefromtheradio.com, which is our website. You can go to the Facebook page, which is It Came From The Radio, or you can tweet us at ICFTR with the hashtag NYCCTickets with the correct name of this song. And you win two free passes to the New York Comic Con on Thursday, which is the 8th, I believe, right? Thursday the 8th in October?
Yeah.
Last week I threw out the wrong week. I threw out the wrong day for
I'll
last
clarify
week.
It for
it's the
you.
9th. 9th. Thursday the 9th. There we go. Thursday the 9th.
There it is.
So yes, you get tickets Thursday the 9th. So congratulations to previous week's winner, which is Crystal Barnes. She correctly guessed the song from the theme of Exo Squad. So hooray for that. Yay. So this week we're going to
kind of a celebration.
So this week we're going to play another song. And as the days go by, if we have no winners, I'll be posting little hints on our Facebook and Twitter pages. So that way people can try and figure out what this song is. So we're ready to play that theme song. And this is the song. So guys, pay attention. Here we go.
Thank you.
That was hot.
Wow, that was hot.
Did you know that song there, Hassan?
Okay, I am fantastic with this stuff. Every one of my friends will tell you I have an uncanny ability to recognize music and movie quotes and stuff like that just by audio, phonic memory, or whatever the experts or the psychiatric treatment people call it, depending on who you want to talk to. And I cannot place that.
Hooray! So all right.
That's a tough one.
So, for those listening, this is once again, it's the full theme song of this show. And obviously, it has no words. So, it was as it aired. So, there was no words in the theme. So, that way, it's not cheating. We didn't take out anything. Yes. This is the actual.
It doesn't confuse anybody.
Right. It's the actual theme song, but it's the extended theme song for this show. So, once again, hashtag NYCC tickets. For two free passes for Thursday, October the 9th, to the New York Comic Con. And first person who gets correctly wins. So there you go.
Did we announce what the theme was from last week?
Yeah, I just said it was Exo Squad.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for paying attention.
Yeah, well, you know.
So yes, Exo Squad. Dun, 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 dun. It was
the Ebola. It's eating my brain. I apologize.
So, yeah, so X-Club was last week, and this week we'll see if we get a winner. Yep. And like I said, as we go along, we'll post more and more hints, just in case it's too hard for you listeners out there. And let's see. So moving on to some real news, I guess we'll call it. In a recent interview, newest Spider-Man Andrew Garfield weighed in on his opinion on the success, or lack thereof, of Amazing Spider-Man 2.
He said, it stinks.
He says... In his British voice, which I didn't know he had.
You didn't know he was English?
No.
Nice work.
When I heard this, I was like, holy crap, wow.
Nice job, radio host.
Hey, it's no follow-up news.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
He says, for me, I read the script that Alex Kurtzman and Bob Orci wrote, and I genuinely loved it. There was this thread running through it. I think what happened was through pre-production, production, and post-production.
They actually let them finish writing. That's what the problem was. Sorry.
That's mean. I think it was through pre-production, production, and post-production when you have something that works as a whole, and then you start removing portions of it because there was even more of it that was in the final cut and everything was related. Once you start removing these things... and saying, no, that doesn't work, and then this thread is broken, and it's hard to go with the flow of the story, certain people at the studio, and problems with certain parts of it, ultimately, the studio is the final say in those movies, and because they're tentpoles, you have to answer to those people. So what are people actually saying? What's the underneath complaint? How can we learn from that? How can we go, oh, God, we effed up because all these people are saying all these things. It's all crap. I'm actually changing the words from what he's saying. I'm making it PG-rated. We have to ask ourselves, what do we believe is true? It is that this is the fifth Spider-Man movie in how many years? There's a bit of fatigue. Is it that there's too much in there? Is that it didn't link? If it links seamlessly, would that be too much? Were the tonal issues? What is it? I think it is valuable. Constructive criticism is different from people just being jerks, and I love constructive criticism. Hopefully we can get underneath to what the criticism about the movie was and if we missed anything.
So his theory is that the scripts themselves were wonderful.
Right. The script itself was wonderful.
Then the committee came in.
Yes.
The crappy, which is in my mind, I'm not using the word crappy. But the crappy committee, but the real word would rhyme with committee,
right.
Would come in and start cutting sequences and little what they deem as unnecessary scenes out of the film.
Yes.
And it becomes a flawed animal.
Yes.
And then they ship it.
Right.
That's basically the theory that he has.
He is blaming the company, the man that is, the man upstairs. He's blaming them. For
this
the
happens to every movie, right? These guys come, these tentpoles supposedly come along, you know, they contribute money to pretty much all the movies that we see.
Right. Your producer, you're going to have what you want in this movie.
Yeah, okay. So then this happens a lot. So how come only these two movies are being severely affected by it? Like, none of the Marvel movies are like, look at the Guardians of the Galaxy. Just destroyed everybody this summer.
That's true. However, they're saying that this is what's happening with Ant-Man. That the people at B are trying to, you know, put their little spin on it. And Kenneth Branagh did say that about Thor, which is why he didn't come back for Thor 2.
Okay, and I get that, and I bet you that does happen. I bet you that happens. The problem I have with it is that these two guys, these particular guys, Orchie and Kurtzman, were also on. There have been attached to a slew of really disappointing or not so good or horrendous, in my opinion, movies.
Right.
And they're allowed to continue to work, and I don't understand how two people can't catch, you know, the flaws and the holes of in a job of writing that usually is done by one person. So let's say, you know, J.K. Rowling sits down, she's like, I'm going to write a Harry Potter book. It's going to be like 1,200 pages.
Right.
She can get through that entire book with minimum plot holes and disappointment through it.
Right.
You know, to the point where, you know, the hundreds of thousands of millions of people love everything that she does and says. These two guys come together, they get a ton of money. Let's just face it, they get a ton of money. And
they do.
Between the two of them, they can't write a credible script. Because we're not going to, no one's going to argue with me about Transformers, right? For at least the first two Transformers.
No one's going to argue about the last Transformers.
I don't think the two of them were particularly involved with the last one, and we'd have to check on that. I know they
I'm going to say they were, just for argument's sake.
Yes, okay, that's fine. We know they were involved with Spider-Man 1, which was technically a disappointment, and
right.
This movie made less than that one.
Correct. Amazing Spider-Man 2 made less than number 1, which made less than regular Spider-Man.
Number 3.
3, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so with the fact that we let these one of these guys is going to be taking over your baby. Right?
Yes, he is.
Unfortunately, yes.
Well, I'm going to say once again that he did very well with the Hawaii Five-O reboot. So
that remains to be seen. I don't necessarily believe so. And then he also did a lot of work on Hercules and Xena.
Yes.
Okay. So these guys have been vets. They've been around for a while because Hercules and Xena, little known fact, was 20 years ago. Or close. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Let's not dwell on it.
Yeah.
But close to 20 years ago. So these guys have been around for quite a while. Okay? And they don't write well, in my opinion. They didn't do Prometheus very well. Lindelof was also attached to Prometheus. They didn't do Star Trek. I was just watching the new Star Trek. In my opinion, they didn't do those very well. There's a lot of holes. There's a lot of problems structurally with those stories. And that's their job. You know? It's not J.J. Abrams' job to write. It's his job to just put all that stuff together and make it visually entertaining for us all.
Right.
It's not the producer's job to write. It's these two guys' job to write these stories. And, all right, we'll go with Garfield, you know, because he's not, I don't know him to be anything other than, you know, an upright, steadfast person who was doing these films, and I did enjoy his work in the two Spider-Man films. Okay?
Right.
So Garfield said these scripts are great, and then these guys come along and start cutting on them, and all of a sudden, these works are not superior works anymore. We'll go with blaming the studios, but I do think there's just
something else going on.
These two guys being involved.
Right.
With yet another, you know, with another turd franchise. I'm sorry, you know. I mean, when do we get to blame the guys in charge? The script is the bones of your product.
Yeah,
you know, if the script isn't right, you know the skeleton doesn't work right. The body doesn't work right.
Exactly.
So I mean, fine. I mean, I had read an article where Garfield's not even sure he's going to be in the next Amazing Spider-Man.
Right. It's all up in the air, but
yeah, which I'm sure they will. I'm sure enough people are going to come together and
get the money.
Just going to throw enough. Yeah. You know, the next Marvel extravaganza is going to come out to some extent, and you know, if the trend continues, they're going to make a lot of money, and you know, Sony's going to be like, "Oh, roll out the Spider-Man trucks quick,
yeah,
so we can catch some of that money."
They're
going to roll out the Spider-Man dump truck.
They do need... Yeah, that's probably how it's going to go.
Yeah, they're going to try to catch as much runoff as humanly possible.
So we're actually already at a halfway point, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Came From The Radio.
And I thought maybe if I could jump in real quick, Mark, to let you know that the music that we're going to feature today will be the soundtrack for the filming of Hassan killing dragons or fighting dragons. Okay, just so you know.
All right.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to the King of Fun Radio. This is your host, Mark Torres speaking.
Oh, I gotta take my armor off. Give me a second.
So, that was Hassan's dragon fighting music, which will be accompanying him wherever he goes fighting dragons in the subways of the Bronx.
Yes.
So, this
on
week...
on my iPod.
You have it on your iPod. All right. So this week, we have a special guest on the phone, a super cool Marvel True Blood artist. We haven't had a Marvel artist in quite some time on the show, so let's give a warm welcome to Mr. Tom Garney. Ron Garney. Oh, my God. I've messed up the first name.
Nice job.
I always mess up the last name.
You leave me hanging in outer space out here, and then you get my name wrong for crying out loud. What's the matter with you?
Well, if it makes you feel better, usually I mess up the last
true
name.
True Blood artist, Mr. Tom Graney.
Oh, man. Well, this is a good way to solo.
Because he doesn't do his homework, and I tell him this every time.
No, but see, I actually did my homework. I met him in person at the convention. I've been talking to him back and forth for a while.
Again, I just didn't look at my name tag close enough when you were scouting for guests for your show.
So,
Well, now that we're off to a great start.
Yes, now we're off to a great start.
Thanks for being here.
Yes. You've been working for Marvel Comics for almost 25 years, if I got it right?
Since 1989-ish. Oof. 1989-90, yeah, 25 years.
So let's just start off with that. How has the comic book industry changed for you as an artist?
Oh, God, it's not even a semblance of, you know, it doesn't really resemble what it was like when I got in, you know. I mean, with the prevalence of the movies, it all really changed a lot when Spider-Man came out, you know, the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. That's when everything really kind of took a big turn, and it, you know, because it proved that a superhero movie could really be hugely successful, and that just, you know, kickstarted everything. And now it's pretty much driven by that, you know. The comics are really just strip mined by the movies, and the you know, there's such a wealth of material that it's amazing that, you know, Hollywood didn't you know, cue into it sooner. But since we have better technology for movies and everything now, you know, now it just, you know, everything's caught up with itself. So that's probably the biggest change I see, you know.
So did you always want to work in comics when you were a kid?
You know, honestly, I didn't always want to work in comics. I mean, I read them when I was young, but, you know, when you're young, you know, I mean, I was drawing since I was little, but, you know, and I would draw superheroes and stuff. I have pictures as early as 4 I did of Superman and Batman with capes on and backwards S's and things like that. And I do remember putting together a notebook paper comic book in 4th grade and things like that. But as time went on, I just, you know, discovered other things. I wasn't really reading as many comics. And then by the time I got to college, that's when I really rediscovered them, actually. I was working at a bar, and the bartender happened to have a comic book he was looking at. It was a Secret Wars comic from the early 80s that Mike Zeck drew, and that's kind of what hooked me back into it all.
Do you find that, I mean, there's a lot of comic book artists out there that just grow up drawing comics and they just go right into it, but you went to college, you did other things. Do you find that makes you a more well-rounded artist or or not?
I can't speak for everybody who's an artist, you know. I really don't know.
Well, you're a missed
artist.
I would
say if I were gonna say thank you. Did you say I was an awesome artist?
I said you were Mr. Artist. That's even better than being
an
awesome
Mr.
artist.
Okay.
That's like a title.
Mr. Tom Artist. yeah, no, I will say, if I were to advise, you know, give advice to any young artists out there, that they should explore many avenues of art, not just comic art, in order to learn how to be one. I mean, from the, you know, the bare bones of it, you need to be a good draftsman. And to find your own particular voice, you need to, you know, explore all kinds of different genres and, you know, and get the proper schooling. And that's, you know, there's lots of guys who've gotten in who, you know, haven't gone my route. I'm not saying that they're, you know, any less rounded, I guess, as I am, but I would always advise younger guys to do it, younger people, guys or girls, you know. So,
So penciler to penciler, Hassan, you're a penciler. Do you have any questions for Ron? Great Marvel artist Ron Garney. I'm going to say that again.
Jim Lee Garney.
actually, yeah. Well, there's a ton of questions, but first question: in the 80s, how easy, difficult, miserable, fantastic was it to break in to being a comic book artist?
It was pretty great. You know, I remember I was practicing samples from, I would say, 1985 on to about 1989 when I got in, so for a few years. You know, but I was bartending at the time, and, you know, I was out of college bartending. I was a nightclub manager for a few years, you know. So
you had real jobs.
Yeah, well, I don't know if nightclub manager is more like a vampire job. I was waking up at all kinds of crazy hours. But, you know, it was a very active social job, I'll say that. And,
right.
So it really was very distracting, especially at that age. I was in my 20s, and, you know, it was all about dating girls and, you know, going to work, collecting a paycheck, you know. And I, you know, it wasn't until I really...
All of this until you got into comic books, right?
Pretty much. Yeah, diametrically opposed, you know, worldviews. I decided I needed to do something serious in my career. I mean, I was doing a little bit of magazine jobs in New Haven and things like that, but nothing really, you know, noteworthy or that could, you know, would have really supported a long-term career. And I knew I loved the comics, and I had been sort of, you know, canoodling with the samples for a while, and then I decided to get serious, and that's when I got in. It was a real shock, I'll tell you that, because I went from being around 1,000 people, you know, 500,000 people a night in a nightclub to nobody every day, you know, working in my house and, you know, going to bed and waking up and just being alone. So it was a tough adjustment.
Is there a particular secret? And I'm granted you can't give away all your secrets, but is there a particular secret to staying?
What, picking up girls or?
No, no.
I do want to know the secret of picking up girls.
Yeah, but that's for a different question. That's your next question, Mark. Is there a particular secret to staying?
The first thing I'll say, Mark, is if you want to pick up girls, remember their name. Make sure you get their name right on the first.
Yeah, well, he's already blown that, so that's a done deal. Staying power, though, you've been doing it for your saying by your statement 20 years. So I'm not accusing you of being there for 20 years. You said 20 years, so
25.
So how did you do that? How did you maintain that?
Well, wait, what was that? Sorry to go back for a second. What was the, I didn't mean to interrupt your question about the secret. What was the question you were going to ask me? I didn't mean to interrupt you.
The staying power. How did you manage to stay in the company?
Yeah, how did you stay for 20 years?
Instead of like, all right, I had enough, I'm done, I'm going to go do something else.
Again, it was 25 years.
25 years.
Yeah, 25.
But, I mean, honestly, it's about being professional, really. I mean, you know, I mean, there's... I can't say that even if you're completely professional, you're always going to get a job. But I mean, I think what helped me was doing a couple of projects that turned out to be very high profile. Quite a few actually. I mean, but what kickstarted it was my run on Captain America. I had already been in the business for a few years at that point, but when Captain America came around, that I did with Mark Waid, it was a real critical success with the fans, and I think that sort of kick-started it and started getting me more, continued to get me good jobs for a while, you know, because you prove yourself, basically, and I think that's a big part of it when you can sell a book, you know, that's a big deal to the company, you know, so.
Great.
But you have to be professional, too. You can't believe, there's guys who are unbelievable artists, but they're not great at deadlines, and you know, but they get paid big money, but they don't do a whole lot. So, I mean, it just depends on what you want to do with your career, you know, which direction you want to go.
I kind of liken this to being an actor, being an artist, because you're part of a whole. And, you know, there's always, you know, there's other actors out there, and each show that you're on, which would be a comic book or comic series.
And there's always, these slick media people who forget exactly how to pronounce your name and who you are and what you're doing. And
you too,
right.
Hassan. You too. Et tu, Hassan. Et tu.
Yeah, right.
So how do you stop yourself from getting that giant ego? I mean, you're a very down-to-earth, humble person when I met you. You were a really awesome guy, really approachable. And, you know, I've talked to many, many artists and celebrities that just get the... And you've been in there for so long. I mean, you would actually have the right working on, you know, Ghost Rider, Spider-Man, working on X-Men, working on Captain America. You would have that right. So how do you keep yourself so humble?
That's a tough question. I'm just who I am. You know, I don't get affected. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that, you know, I've enjoyed my success, you know, but I don't think, You know, I don't think that gives anyone the right to assume that that means that's going to last forever. I don't think it gives anybody the right to assume that they're better than anyone else. I don't think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's a great career, you know, but I'm not, I've always been somebody who's able to keep things in perspective. I mean, I, you know, and I'm not, I love comics and I love what we do. I think it's a valuable service in the area of entertaining people, and, you know, and stories need to be told. It's part of our culture and heritage, and, you know, it's a, you know, it's modern day mythology, and I truly believe in that. However, I'm not sitting here discovering the Higgs boson. You know what I mean? I mean, so I can keep things in perspective and say, you know, what I'm doing is great, and I'm honored that I have people who enjoy what I do, and I just try not to take that for granted. I don't know. I mean, I've certainly, I know what you mean. I've certainly met my share of artists who I know who, and writers, so plenty of writers and artists and creators who, you know, I can clearly see a difference in how they been affected by their success, but it's something they have to go through, and ultimately when they come out of it, hopefully they'll, you know, see it from a different perspective, and you know, things will fall into place for them, you know, it, hopefully it doesn't go to their head forever, but what can you do? That's just life, man.
Son, you said you had some more questions for Ron?
Well, he didn't, you never really said how you broke it. Did you know an editor, or did you just submit
samples?
Yeah,
no, what happened was is I was working on samples. I initially started off in this, Marvel had a contest called the Marvel Tryout Contest, and they actually printed a big book with Bristol board in it and blue-lined drawings you could ink over. I think John Romita Jr. had drawn them. And they gave you pages to pencil, and they gave you a script. It was like a whole package where you get the script, the paper to pencil on, the ink, something to ink over so you could show you could ink, and color, and, you know, all kinds of fun stuff. And I think lettering was even involved in that. But I did that, and I didn't win. So I think Mark Bagley took it.
Yeah, actually. Mark Bagley.
And it kind of lit a fire under me, because when I was growing up, I was always, you know, considered the best artist in class and that kind of thing. But like I said before, I took that for granted, you know, in that direction, I took it for granted. I didn't look out of my head, but I just took it for granted that I could always draw, because there was nobody around like me where I grew up. I was kind of the guy they threw peanuts at, said, hey, draw, monkey, you know, that kind of thing. So, but now everybody draws, you know, it's crazy. So I always thought I could, and then it was a real wake-up call when I got to college, and I could, all of a sudden I was immersed in this world of, you know, so many people who are vastly further developed than I was, and, you know, and I realized I couldn't sit on my butt anymore. Anyways, I decided to really put some effort into it, and then I found out that a guy lived in the area who, in my area out in Connecticut, who worked for Marvel and who actually happened to have drawn the Secret Wars issue that I got back into comics after reading. And his name was Mike Zeck, and he turned out he lived like 7 minutes from my house. So it was really weird, you know, because somebody mentioned, said, oh, man, I'd love to do this for a living, because I wanted to be a movie director kind of a thing, you know, and loved movies and camera angles and shots and storytelling. And then when I rediscovered the comics, it kind of, you know, was all a short form of that. And so the bartender or somebody who had the comic had mentioned to me that the guy lived in the area. So I actually looked him up in the phone book. I wouldn't suggest anybody else do this.
You stalked him?
Yeah, I stalked
Mike Zeck.
And I actually called his number and left him a message, said, hey, could you look at my stuff? And he called me back.
Wow.
And it worked, yeah. I wasn't hanging around outside
the
house.
Well, things were slightly different in the 80s. Like people were just more personable back then. Well, that I discovered.
That's very true. I don't know about personable, but I definitely think that it's not as acceptable to just call somebody's house anymore, you know, just to say, hey, can you look at my work? I mean, it's a real boundary thing, and I don't know. I was so eager, and I didn't think anything of it back then. I just figured I'd give the guy a call, you know, and see what he had to say. He was a, you know, kind of a, you know, he was older than I was, and he was in the business for a long time. I was more looking for advice, even if he didn't look at my work or think I had any talent, you know, I could at least get some perspective on it, you know. And but now, you know, this world's become so screwy. I mean, you know, it's funny because we live in this age of Facebook and everybody's in each other's business, but it still seems weird to call somebody on the phone. That seems to be such an invasion.
Well, that's kind of like the last thing you do. I mean, you can text someone, you can instant message them and stuff like that, but if you call, that's like the ultimate, it's the ultimate no-no. Phone.
Well, because when you
back
call
then,
somebody,
it didn't seem that big a deal, you know?
No, because it wasn't.
When you call somebody now, it is a big deal. It's like, wow, we're actually talking, and we get to have to make it an actual conversation.
Yeah, well, it helped because I sent him flowers and chocolates and stuff, you know?
Mike Zeck did, he did the Craven's Last Hunt. Is that correct?
He did, yeah. He's amazing.
Okay, yeah. I did that. Those are some of my favorite, it's my favorite Spider-Man story, and it's some of my favorite artwork.
Yeah, he's got a very classic style. He was mentored a little bit by Wally Wood, I think, and you know, so he's got a great noir style, and that particular Craven's Last Hunt, that particular group of books was really amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic stuff. That's fantastic. He's kind of your link in.
I sent him my stuff, and he called me up and told me what I needed to work on. He thought it looked pretty good for, you know, for somebody who had never done it. And he thought I had a lot of talent, so he told me to work on it. And then in the meantime, I invited him to the bar I was working at, and he ended up showing up and hung out. And then we ended up, he invited me to a convention or two, he invited me to sit at his table and draw for fans. And I wasn't even in Marvel at that point, but I was like, whoa, you know, it was amazing experience, especially because, you know, in my 20s, it was like Marvel was this monolithic, you know, unreachable thing, you know, so it was an amazing time for me, you know. It changed my life, certainly, for the better. And, you know, it wasn't long after that I went in, he took me in, and I met a bunch of editors, and I had offers on my answer machine by the time I got home.
Oh, man.
Pretty great, yeah.
That's a great story. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, I know you said you have an upcoming thing you wanted to promote. So what's going on with Mr. Ron Garney right now?
I'm working on a book called Men of Wrath. It's a creator-owned project that I'm working on with Jason Aaron through Icon. I don't know if you are familiar with Icon, but it's Marvel's creator-owned imprint. And it gives us a chance to own the characters, own the book, and... our first issue comes out in October, and I'm excited about it. One, creatively, because it's not not a superhero book at all. And I've been doing superheroes for so long that I was a little, you know, kind of frothing at the mouth to get my teeth into something else that's more based in a real world sort of thing, story, you know, kind of like Road to Perdition was, or, you know, something like that. And this is in that vein. It's kind of like a No Country for Old Men type of story, and it has, you know, it's about a hitman, this older hitman named Ira Wrath, and he's got a history of murderers in his family, basically, and it goes back in time, and we see how that all began and how this is all going to tie up, because he ends up contracting a hit on his own son. So it goes from there, and you know, it's pretty intense, and I'm really happy with it. It's been a lot of fun so far.
So when you come up with something that's creator owned, I mean, that's been a big thing for comics for years. I mean, there's still legal battles going on right now about stuff that's been done 50 years ago. How is that looked upon on the inside? I mean, on the outside we can see, you know, how things are, but what on the inside? How is that reflected upon?
You mean as far as
creator owned, like when
the battle that's going on with some
like
of these
when
people,
you're doing,
or Kirby Estate and things
well,
like that.
Well, like for yourself, when you're doing work, you know, it must be in the back of your mind that if you create a character in a story you're doing, is that something you think about? Oh, I better not create this character in this book because they're going to own it, or is it just I'm just going to work as I'm supposed to?
No, I certainly do that. I've you know, actually had said in the past that I wouldn't create the character, but I'll draw one that's been created for that reason. You know, Marvel will have you sign character agreements, and you get, you know, a small stipend for that. But ultimately, I would always advise anybody to protect themselves in that regard, you know, especially in this day and age when, you know, you just never know, and it's your creation. But back then, it, you know, back in the 70s and the 60s, and you know, and all, it was a different time, and, you know, nobody had a crystal ball who could have predicted, you know, what the future is going to be like. But, you know, we have to learn now from the people who came before us and protect yourselves and treat yourself like the way the corporation treats itself, you know. Treat yourself as that entity that you know, is that should own its own thing and should, you know, reap the rewards of the work you put in, and I'm a firm believer in that. That's not to say you can't do the things for the company, but just make sure you know what it is you're signing, you know. And that's really it. That's the bottom line. We live in a legal world, and that's the bottom line, you know. I certainly have very much sympathy for the people who see their characters or what have you taking off and making millions of dollars for something that, you know, that they started probably in a sketchbook, you know, God knows when. So
yeah.
That's pretty tough.
And making no money.
Yeah, I mean, how can you argue it? I mean, I would say that it would go a long way for any company, and I'm not pointing a finger at anyone, I'm just saying it would go a long way for any company to be the first, I'm not saying they haven't, but, you know, in the public eye, to be the first to acknowledge those truths about where those characters came from.
Right.
And to acknowledge them in a way that's fair, you know, and stop bringing, you know, so much legality into it just for the, you know, the sake of saving yourself a few dollars. Because, you know, ultimately, if it doesn't go that way, you know, you'll eventually stop having people create for you at all, you know. And
right.
And then what, you know? So
they don't. Never. No one ever understands ever diminishing returns, though. It's not a concept that is prevalent in the business world, that this is finite and it's going to run out if you keep treating it this way. So, I mean, it's a great, what you're saying is wise and it's great, but it's better advice, and that's a horrible English, so I apologize, but it's much better advice for young people who are the talent than it is for the industry. It's because the industry they just never seem to get the finality.
Well, because a lot of the people who run it, the funny thing is it's this weird, you know, meshing of business talent versus creative talent. I mean, there's the people who run and are successful in big business and things like that are talented for that in that realm. I mean, they're able to turn $1 into $5, you know, all that cliche stuff.
All right, so we have less than a minute, so I just wanted to point out once again, Ron, what's the website that people can find you at so they can see your stuff at before we go?
Well, I have a website that I haven't touched much in a long time called rongarney.com, but you can reach me on Facebook, and, you know, if you can manage to friend me there, I'm going to have to start a separate page because I can't accommodate everybody, but that sound too egotistical for you?
not at all.
But, you know, if you can catch me there, a lot of my art's there, and you'll be able to see a lot of my Men of Wrath stuff and things like that. I'm going to start posting it soon on the rongarney.com as soon as I can.
All right, so once again, thank you very much. I am so sorry about messing up your
first
name.
No apologies.
That's
fine. That
about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you missed any part of the show, you can go to our website, www.itcamefromtheradio.com, and listen to the archives. It should be up in a week or so. We will see you next week.
Thanks, you have guys. Been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.